Now, Jilly, try this one.
I'm getting tarmac, Aaron sweater, and just a hint of toilet duck.
That's remarkable.
Oh, go on, tell me, what is it?
It's tarmac, Aaron sweater, and just a hint of toilet duck. You want to drop more?
Still goes around.
From East Devon College, after the catering class's international evening, we serve you Still Goes Around on food and drink. With Charles Collingwood, Belinda Lang, Kerry Shale and Richard Stilgo, and special guests, the classic buskers and Pam Ayres. Darling, what's the matter?
It's hopeless, darling. It's a total disaster. I've just broken half the silver service trying to get the oysters open. The rocket salad looks like an arrangement of dried grasses. The lamb en croûte isn't en croûte anymore. We're out of real coffee and I've just dropped the syllabub on the rattan run.
Oh, well, look, darling, I mean, don't worry. We'll call it off. I'll ring round and let everyone know before it's too late.
No, no one's coming, darling. It's just us.
Food and drink is there to keep you alive. You put it in your mouth, it gets turned into energy. And yet this simple physiological process gets more rubbish written about it than almost anything except the royal family. Food is now a ritual in which everyone jumps up and down and squeaks as Jessica brings in her watercress soup. Watercress soup, incidentally, is an anagram of Euro scrap stew. Who started all this? Who first cooked something? Who was it who decided that having risked life and limb to catch a wild boar, that the best thing to do with it was to stick it in the fire? But to find the answer to this and to many other questions, we have come to East Devon College, where the catering course has just given itself and us an epic and international dinner, which was basically watercress soup followed by Euro scrap stew. No, it was terrific. And a round for Rick and Ross. Let us begin with cooking, where cooking belongs. On the radio. At 100 microwaves. And that was Jim Nopperty. But he doesn't say what he was playing. Now, as usual at this time, it's time for our If Music Be the Food of Love spot with our classic cook. Hello, Barry.
Oh, hello, Harry.
Now, what have you got for us today?
Well, Harry, today I thought we'd do a boiled egg.
Oh, I love boiled eggs. I've always wanted to know how to do boiled eggs. Now, let's start, like we always do, with the ingredients.
Well, of course, Harry. Well, you need a pan of water.
Would that be Tiverton Spring Devonshire Mineral Water, Barry?
That would do very well. That's perfectly all right. And a pinch of salt.
Would that be Pennine salt?
Yes, it would. And an egg.
Any old egg?
Well, until we find a chicken willing to sponsor this bit of the programme, yes.
So, let me get this right. That's Tiverton spring water, a pinch of Pennine salt, and any old egg.
So you boil the water.
That'll be on the big boiling ring of an electric cooker at 425 degrees centigrade, gas mark 8, the left-hand plate of an Aga, 2 minutes under a Harrier jump jet, a year in a hay box, or 30 seconds in a Sellafield reactor.
Yes?
Well, you can't be too careful. There are people with all kinds of cookers out
there. Well, then when it's boiling, you carefully add the egg and boil it for just 4 minutes.
Thank you, Barry. Here's the minute waltz, four times. So Some time ago, the catering industry went out and did a survey and asked people what they ate when they went to a restaurant. And 82% of the people who answered the questionnaire said that they always had this. First the prawn cocktail slides over the lips, followed at once by the steak and the chips. Now to decide what to have for the sweet, what's on the trolley that's jolly to eat? It all looks delicious, but just coffee please. Take it away, put it in the deep freeze. Unless, oh, I'd missed it, it's there, my great vice. I cannot resist it, just the tiniest slice. Black Forest Gatto is good for you, with E407 and E102. Black Forest Gatto, as black as your hat, oh, there's nothing so healthy and good for you. It's stiff with cholesterol, sugar and fat. It narrows your arteries right down to that. It gives you a migraine, angina and plaque. You'd get far more goodness from eating the pack. But still, people cry after seafood and steak. Give me a slice of the fatherland's cake. Turn up the sound on the old Gatto blaster. Sing it again, only louder and faster. Mono sodium glutamate. Black Forest Gatto is good for you. Best before May 1972. Black Forest Gatto, as black as your hatto. Colored with essence of skin of mulatto. Serve in the schloss, in a palace or chateau. Black Forest Gatto is good for you.
Most kind of you all to have brought wine with you.
Really?
Oh. Now, why should you have to provide everything, eh?
Besides, a bit more fun to see what everyone else comes up with.
Right, well, we've got a fair old selection here. What have you got with you, Dorinda?
As you know, I do love my Eastern European red, so I thought I'd push the boat out and give this Polish Shiraz a whirl.
Now, that's
quite bold.
Striking, absolutely striking.
Dorinda. Yes, here's a hit. Jeremy, what about you?
I've ranged a bit further afield with a good, crisp Indian Moselle.
Ah, super.
And, and a rather coy little Malaysian Merlot.
Oh, it's marvellous, marvellous. Shall we try? What about you, Craig? You've got something from the New World, I hope.
Of course, yeah. Well, you all remember that very palatable Cab Sau from Papua New Guinea we had last time.
Yes, that was
fine.
Yes, well, this is even better. A 1989 Goose Green Claret.
What, Falcon?
Yeah, exactly. Try this. Ripper.
Now, words fail me.
What about you, Henry? What have you got tucked away there in that napkin?
Well... Yes. This really is a bit of a discovery for me. This is quite unlike anything I've ever tasted.
Oh, good. What is it?
It's French. I tried to find an anagram for Pamir's, which is something to do with food. And the nearest I can find is Army Peas. She is much, much better than Army Peas. Ladies and gentlemen, Pamir's!
I'd like to talk about suet for a little while. Because suet's fallen into disrepute, really, hasn't it? When we were children in Stanford in the Vale, we used to eat a lot of suet. And I used to go with my mother down to the butcher's, and she'd walk up to the counter and ask for whatever she wanted, for a couple of pounds of shin of beef. We used to have quite a lot of shin of beef. It was tough, wasn't it? It was very tough. It was very tough if you didn't boil it for the full 9 hours. And she'd say, "Give us a bit of suet, Bob." And he'd turn on his heel and walk up to the back of the shop, and hanging along the back of the shop on a series of hooks, there were a number of carcasses. And they were there so the blowflies could come straight in. They didn't have to sort of expend energy, waste it. They could go straight in. And Bob would reach into the body cavity of one of these carcasses and wrench forth a piece of suet, which would come away with a sort of papery tearing sound that you never quite forgot. And he would put it on the counter and wrap it up in a sheet of hygienic newspaper and give it to Mother. And Mother would bring it home, and she would incorporate it in a whole variety of puddings, and some of them were savoury, but for the most part they were sweet. But most of all, she made the traditional suet duff, you know, which came in the shape of a bomb, really, didn't it? Like a great big sagging bomb. And then Mother would stick it in this great big saucepan and get it to a good rolling boil, and go off then and leave it for what seemed to me like the rest of the day. It probably wasn't quite that long, but it was certainly until the windows downstairs, upstairs, next door, were all steamed up and pouring with condensation. And you could always tell when it was cooked because it used to turn an attractive shiny grey. And it was always named according to the filling which it contained. So that, for instance, if it had currants or dates in it, well, that would be a traditional spotted dick. And if it had homemade jam rolled up inside it, that would be a jam roly-poly. And if my mother was hard up that week and she couldn't afford anything at all to go inside it and it was just plain, we used to call that old lady's leg. And you'd have old lady's leg with golden syrup or with custard, and it was very, very beneficial to your arteries. And this is the poem then which I would like to follow that with. This is Puddings, A Slice of Nostalgia, and I'd like you to imagine that I am the husband and this is my wife over here, and I don't like her that much really because she doesn't feed me the good old food like my mother used to. So I've set the scene for you now. Don't open no more tins of Irish stew, Alice. You know it makes me pace the bedroom floor. You give me Irish stew a week last Sunday, and I never got to sleep till 4:30. You open up another tin of Spam, Alice, or them old Frankfurter sausages in brine, and we'll stab 'em sitting opposite each other, and you can dream your dreams, and I'll dream mine. And I'll dream about my apple-cheeked old mother, her smiley face above a pot of broth. She used to cook us every sort of pudding, you know, proper puddings in a pudding cloth. When we came home from school all cold and hungry, one look along the clothesline was enough. And if the pudding cloth was up there flapping, well, we all knew what it meant. A suet duff. Oh, a suet duff would set your cheeks aglowing. Suet duff and custard in a mound. And even if you'd run about all morning, a suet duff would stick you to the ground. Or else there'd be a lovely batter pudding with all the corners burnt so hard and black that if your teeth had grown a bit too long, like, well, that'd be the stuff to grind them back. She used to make us lovely apple puddings. She'd boil them all the morning on the stove. And if you bit on something hard that wasn't apple, Well, the chances were you'd bitten on a clove. Or else there'd be a big jam roly-poly. We'd watch it going underneath the knife. And if you took a bite a bit too early, well, the red-hot jam would scar your mouth. For life. Oh, bring back the roly-poly pudding. Bread and butter pudding. Spotted dick. Great big jugs filled up with yellow custard. That's the sort of puddings I would pick. But here's the tube of artificial cream, Alice. I've cleaned the nozzle out. See, the hole's so fine. And we'll squirt it on our little pots of yoghurt. And you can dream your dreams. And I'll dream mine.
Who was that?
Down here. Help me. Help me.
Where?
In your soup. Help me.
It's a fly. Well, how did you get in there?
I fell off the ceiling.
Into my soup?
It's a tricky maneuver. A ceiling takeoff. You have to flip over really quickly before you stall.
I can imagine. If you don't mind my saying so, I'm not very keen on flies.
I've washed my feet.
How?
In that water you're drinking.
You could still have germs on your legs.
Well, I haven't.
No, I'm sorry. It won't do. You'll have to go.
Oh, help me. Help me. Help me.
Waiter.
Help me.
Yes, sir?
Waiter, there's a fly in my soup.
I'm sorry, sir. I'll put him back on the butter.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Right. Okay, class. Switch off your ovens and gather round. Now, I've been standing here watching you work, and I have to say I'm totally shocked by what I'm seeing. And I have to say that, in my opinion, not a single student on this course is worthy of calling himself a chef.
Well, what do you mean, chef? Didn't you say earlier you'd never seen better cooking at a college?
Oh, yes, the food's fine, no problem there. It's just you've got a lot of work to do on the temperament side of the chef's job. For example, what's going on with the way you treat your colleagues and staff? I haven't seen a single tantrum all day. You, Clarkson.
Yes?
What kind of a chef do you call yourself? When your Stilton souffle collapsed, what did you do?
I scraped it into the bin and started again.
Exactly. If that had happened to a real chef, the porter would still be wiping the last bit off the wall now. What about you, O'Toole?
Me?
Yes, that lamb pie you were making. What was its principal other ingredient?
Sherry. Yes, dry sherry.
And where did you pour the sherry?
Into the pie.
Into the pie. Need I say more? Wrong. Down your own throat. Remember, real chefs never go thirsty.
What else did we do wrong?
Where do I begin? Not a single attempt to bully the young vegetable chef. No one making the slightest unwanted advances to the pretty young Spanish waitress.
Ooh,
and not a solitary sarcastic remark questioning the sexuality of the maitre d'.
Ooh,
really? How do you expect to run a kitchen if you're going to treat people with respect? I do not know.
Ooh. What about the customers? I bet they went home happy.
When you practice dealing with a customer, sending back a steak, none of you behave like a proper chef. How many times do you have to be told? Take it off the plate with your teeth, kick it round the kitchen for a bit, and send it back to the buggers with a bit of parsley on top. Now, who's going to be the first to give me some real shipping?
What is it?
He asked, his brow creased with suspicion. Each mealtime she dreaded the same inquisition. She tried to provide him with dietary variety. He turned it all down. He would not even try it. He shouted,
"It's foreign!"
and left it uneaten. that she wasn't defeated, she wouldn't be beaten.
Who's this thing?
He asked. She said,
this is lasagna, and no, it won't actually sing Rule Britannia, but now we are part of a wider community. Most people eat things like this with impunity.
It's muck,
he declared, throwing it at the wall.
I'm not eating that. I'll have nothing at all. What's this thing?
He said.
It's chicken tandoori, a memory of England's imperial glory.
Sadly, predictably, it was refused.
You're trying to poison me, girl,
he accused. After some weeks of this, he was looking quite sickly, and to her concern, losing weight rather quickly.
What's this thing?
He said when she sent for the doctor. After weeks of starvation, his skinniness shocked her.
Some soup,
said the doctor.
It should keep him alive.
She made leek, potato, with chervil and chive.
What's this thing?
He said, to her great consternation. And later that evening, he died of starvation.
What's this thing?
The worm said on finding his body.
It hasn't much flesh. Its condition is shoddy. It isn't well seasoned. It doesn't smell nice. It didn't eat garlic. It didn't eat spice.
But they ate the corpse up and did not make a fuss, which proves worms are sometimes much brighter than us. Ladies and gentlemen, the classic buster.
Here's Bruno's Ave Maria played on a rubber chicken.
We continue with our book at bedtime, The Trollop by Joanna Church. In episode 2073, Tabitha's affair with Giles has come to an end, and she has gone back to her husband, the rector of Colney Cross.
Colney Cross still had proper shops, a haberdasher's, a fishmonger, a hardware store. All their proprietors had at times been very understanding about Brian's tiny stipend. More, indeed, than she ever had. She came to the baker's. Needing bridge rolls for the vicar's tea, she went in. A young man stood behind the counter. He was about 17, with broad shoulders, a narrow waist and large feet. Rather like a lectern, she thought. He turned away to concentrate on the batch of baps he was shaping. You're Terry, aren't you? She said, who used to play with Philip. He didn't turn to face her, but kept moulding each bap. That's right, he said. She walked round the counter. May I have a look at your wonderful little buns? He still didn't look. You mustn't use butter, he said. You want margarine. Then not too much kneading. He stared straight at her. Margarine, he said, and not too much kneading. He took her clumsily, knocking over a tray of rolls. Joyfully, with nothing to prove, they showed how much they needed each other. Afterward, she lay silently in the rolls. They were right. The loudest noise was the clock ticking. The next morning, there was a knock at the door. It was into Flora. Terry had sent her some margarine.
Gee, Jenny, weren't those Yemeni poets just great? Thanks for coming back here for a little bite. If you'd just like to sit here and... I'll be sitting there. Oh, please, no, let me.
It's all right. I'm quite capable of moving my own chair, thank you.
Right on. Well, I'll get the first course.
What is it?
Foie gras.
Oh, sorry, I don't eat foie gras. I couldn't possibly enjoy something that's the result of force-feeding young geese till their insides burst.
Oh, yeah. I see. How thoughtless of me. Maybe we should just go straight on to the tuna steaks.
Oh, how is it caught?
Sorry?
Net or line?
Well,
if you don't know, I'd better pass. Couldn't live with myself dining off something whose capture might have led directly to the death of a dolphin.
Yes. Yeah. I can see how that might be a little bit of a problem. A glass of wine? While I think what to give you instead.
Oh, dear. It's Chilean.
Is that a problem?
Only if you care about slave labor, democratic accountability, and the misappropriation of debt-financed funding.
Oh, right. Well, I don't know where that leaves us. Oh, look, I've got a tin of baked beans.
Not for me.
Oh, what is it this time? The lack of representative rights for pulses? The fact that tomato sauce is an evil agent of Western capitalism? The untold damage human flatulence causes to the ozone layer?
No. I just hate baked beans. Tell you what, why don't we go out and eat? I could murder a cheeseburger.
That was Still Goes Around on Food and Drink from East Devon College in Tiverton. It was written and presented by Richard Silgo with additional material by Ben Miller and Paul Dornan. And featured Charles Collingwood, Belinda Lang, Kerry Shale, Pam Ayres, and the Classic Buskers. This mouth-watering trifle was a heavy entertainment production.